when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying, oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can go on pretending thereby. The name of this show is Let's Create a Better World. And we're going to talk today about what you can do to make this a better world, how you can take part as an activist or as a bystander. We're going to talk about all the things that are going on in the world. Our first guest is Blaise Fontaine. He'll be on in another minute or so. He is the office of the director of Office of the Americas, and we're going to talk about a group that he's a part of and I'm a part of. It's called World Beyond War. And we're going to talk about other things going on this planet. Our second guest is Brandon Christie from Zeitgeist. He's one of the top speakers and directors of the global Zeitgeist movement, great group of activists. The next 2 weeks we'll have on, next week we'll very likely have Marianne Williamson running for 33rd District in California in what may be the richest and the most vocal Congress area in the country. We will be talking about cell phone radiation the following week. Now, if you like our shows, you can listen on the archives. And also, if you have a friend or yourself not near a laptop or computer, here's the number you can call to hear the show on your phone. Area 712-432-7132. All right, very good. Let's get to our first guest. I'm excited about this show because I have been an anti-war activist for many years, and one of the people that I look up to and one of the great all-time activists, period, regardless of what subject matter, we have on the line today. That's Blaise Fontaine. He is the director of Office of the Americas. He's a key member of World Beyond War. He's done so much work for many years, and Blaise just turned 85 a couple of weeks ago. Happy birthday, Blaise. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Bobby. I had a great birthday present because the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, after a year of work, finally filed a Pacific Nation Challenge, nine nuclear-armed states in lawsuits before the World Court. This is extremely important because the Republic of the Marshall Islands has filed an unprecedented lawsuit in the International Court of Justice to hold nine nuclear-armed states accountable for flagrant violations of international law with respect to their nuclear disarmament obligations under the 1968 Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So this is not only filed at The Hague, the highest body of the UN, the World Court, it is also filed in the San Francisco Federal District Court in case the U.S. does not go along with the suit from The Hague. This is a very big thing, and some of the major Nobel Prize winners of the world are behind this country of 68,000 people, the Marshall Islands. That's all they have, 68,000 people. They have been bombed and bombed and bombed 1,000 times more than the Hiroshima bombing. And they were used in this fashion until 190 countries signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And ultimately, they agreed not to test in the atmosphere anymore, but a great deal of damage was done. 67 nuclear bombs were detonated in the Marshall Islands during this period. That's the equivalent of 1.5 Hiroshima bombs dropped every day. So the great Castle Bravo bombing was 1,000 times larger than the Hiroshima bombing. They did incredibly great damage to the environment, and now the lawsuit is in process.
Well, and Blaise, you know, I heard about the Marshall Islands, and I heard you talk about it, and it's just a great breakthrough, and hopefully this shows to me that there are small countries in this world that, like many, many countries, that don't like what the U.S. and other countries are doing in the nuclear field, in the war field, the weapons field. It's just really bad. Let's talk about, though, let's switch to something just for a minute to World Beyond War, a great group. Tell our listeners about the group, how it started, and what's been going on in the future.
Well, the point is that many of us believe that we cannot sustain this planet and sustain perpetual war. And that's what's happening now. And we have abolished things in the past. We abolished slavery, which still exists, we know. But it was at least legally abolished. And we were very proud of a book written by David Swanson, the book called War No More, The Case for Abolition, making it clear that we must abolish war at this time because it's ruining the planet. It is the greatest cause of global warming. It is devastating to the human race, to the flora and fauna of the world, and we simply have to end it. And we can do it if we have the courage to go ahead and make that happen. So that's what we're dedicated to, abolishing war. And part of that, of course, includes abolishing nuclear weapons. And that's why these countries are involved at this time that are being charged by the World Court to end this atrocity. Now, the greatest evil on Earth is warfare, which is made up of basically murder, torture, lies, rape. That's what a war is. That's all a war has ever been. And we're talking about aggressive war, which is what the UN is talking about. The UN was established to end the scourge of war, and that's what we want to do. Now, the nuclear non-proliferation treaty called for the abolishing of nuclear weapons. That's the part of it we rarely hear about. It wasn't simply not to test. It wasn't simply to stop the testing. It was to stop nuclear war. So we have Tony DeBroom as co-agent foreign minister of the islands, and we have David Krieger, president of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, who is a consultant on this, and many great lawyers and people who have won the Nobel Prize, including Helen Caldicott, and including Daniel Ellsberg, and Richard Falk, and Bianca Jagger, and so many others who have realized that time has come to end this. So the movement to abolish war is something we feel the time has come for that, and we support in every way. And what we're finding out is that throughout the world, people are supportive. I think people realize that we can't continue war. People love peace. Any of us that have gone to countries like Iraq or any other countries at war in Latin America or even in Asia, we've found that when you arrive somewhere unarmed, people are quite friendly. It's very rare to get a bad reception. But when you arrive with depleted uranium and bombs and all sorts of violent methods, you're not necessarily well received. We're seeing in the press every day now about Afghanistan that U.S. citizens are being shot and foreign visitors are being shot, and even wonderful doctors and nurses have been shot. We're horrified by it, but we have to realize that when you break into people's homes, destroy their family, torture their young people, devastate their land, somebody's going to be angry. And that angry can continue for 200 or 300 years, and it can be shown toward people who are totally innocent. We were just so sad to see a wonderful doctor killed the other day in Afghanistan. It was just is just the anger of people whose lives have been devastated, the anger of them seeing their children eliminated. Our press is really kind of silly on this. It's wondering why. It's almost, you get the tone in our press of, well, we were so nice to you. We're here to help you. Why are you angry at us? I mean, we can't deal with reality. We only deal with denial. And now we have to deal with reality and understand that wars do not make friends with people. And it's time for us to realize that we can make friends if we want to.
For our listeners, I'm speaking to Blaise Bonpain. He's part of World Beyond War. He's director of Office of the Americas, one of the great all-time activists. Just turned 85. You don't mind me saying so again, Blaise. There is the World Beyond War. You mentioned some key names. It's an all-star lineup. The people that are in this group are all people in their own right that did unbelievable things, Nobel Prizes and stopping certain segments of certain wars. These are real, true all-star heroes. These are more than just activists. These are real Americans. Anyway, I'd like to change the subject to drones. I know that drones have not only killed a lot of innocent people in many countries recently, more countries than more and more, but there's talk about drones in the United States. Could you give us your take on all that, basically?
Well, it's just another way of terrifying our people, because corrupt government is held together by fear. If you read biblical literature, you see about 10,000 times the word "do not be afraid." But the purpose of corrupt governance is to extend fear to a point, as J. Edgar Hoover said, that we want to create paranoia. And then you can control people. Then you can say, do whatever we say. Then you have what are called the origins of a police state. As a matter of fact, we have a former top NSA official. His name is Bill Binney. He created the agency's mass surveillance program for digital information. He's a 32-year NSA veteran. He's regarded as a legend within the agency. He was senior technical director and managed thousands of NSA employees. And his statement is the following: we are now a police state. That is coming from the top NSA official. He realized what we've done. We've created terror at home. We've created people afraid of saying what they think. And I find that so common on the air. People are terrified to say what they think. They know very well that we're out of control in conducting unnecessary, illegal, immoral wars. And they're not speaking out. Well, silence is complicity. And people have to learn how to speak out. So we have, fortunately, people within government who are speaking out, as Ellsberg did, as Snowden does. And here's another. They're coming out one after another. This is Binney, B-I-N-N-E-Y, Bill Binney. And he said, we are now a police state. Well, we don't want to be a police state. We weren't established to be a police state, and we have to oppose that. So that's what we are doing. He is raised with, this is a totalitarian process. So we have very serious problems at home. We're not delivering health care properly. We're not delivering education. As a matter of fact, we're making it very, very hard to get. Our infrastructure is falling apart. Our dams are not working. Our bridges have to be rebuilt. And here we are calling ourselves, a model for the world. Well, it's simply not true. We're in very serious deterioration, and we can't function as a police state.
That's right. Great. This is wonderful information for our listeners, Blaise. I'm Bobby Elias. It's called Let's Create a Better World. This show and we're on every Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you for coming in. Now, I want to change the subject to two areas that have seen a lot of changes over the last 10, 15 years, and you've been involved, I know, in Central and South America. But let's talk about below the United States border, the Latino countries, Central and South America. Let's talk about the Middle East. Here's what I want to talk about, Blaise. There's been many dictators that have been displaced, taken out, outvoted. And it's been incredible, big changes going on. I'd like you to speak on that, please.
Well, Latin America has become the example to the world. Over the years, the 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st centuries, we had worked very hard. That when I say we, I mean our country. I have to say it's mine, so I take part of responsibility when I say we. For we established dictatorships throughout the Americas. We overthrew elected governments like the great government of Salvador Allende in Chile, like the government of Guatemala, the governments throughout the area, including places like Venezuela. And we, dictatorship was our government of choice, because you talk to one person, you tell that one person what to do, and he or she carries out your wishes. Well, Latin America has turned itself around. It has become an example to the world of the amazing work of Hugo Chavez in recent decades, who was reelected and reelected and reelected. We could count probably 12 to 14 different specific elections where the people called him back because he existed with the phrase of José Martí, con los pobres de la tierra quiero yo mi suerte echar, with the poor of the earth I want to throw in my luck. And he gave a preferential option for the poor. And by doing that, you turn society upside down. You say, look, we have people here who are not eating. That is going to be our preferential option. We're going to deal with the fact that people should be able to eat. We're dealing here with people who have no health care. We're going to turn society around. We're going to see that everyone has health care. In doing this, you create a democratic society with economic democracy, something we do not have and never have had in the United States. At the present time, we have probably the worst distribution of wealth in the world. Here we have people working 40 hours a week, 40 hours a week, and living either in their car or on the street because they will never get a first and a last and a security deposit on their home. Full-time workers. Now, Latin America is breaking through that with new programs toward health care. Of course, Cuba led the way a long time ago, and they were very dependent on the Soviet Union, which existed at that time, and they were quite rigid. Over the years, of course, the Soviet Union fell apart, but throughout this, before the Soviet Union and after the Soviet Union, this poor country, constantly attacked by the United States, blockaded by the United States, health care is a right for every individual. Education is a right for every individual. These things are being carried out, and they have been carried out with a very frugal government. I say frugal because to move from misery to frugality is an enormous step. Frugality means you have enough, and you have an education, and you're moving forward. Misery means you don't have enough, you don't have an education. And it appears that every dictatorship wants to have illiteracy. I think our country right now is choosing illiteracy by making higher education out of reach for so many and making them into some kind of wage slave when they get out of college, if they get out of college, trying to repay a debt, which is now the largest size debt in the United States, and that is college loan debt. This is a disgrace. So we can look to Latin America for leadership, and instead of that, we're doing what we've done over the years. We have tried to overthrow the government of Venezuela and are trying very hard today. The NED and USAID exist to help internally overthrow governments like Venezuela. They spend millions of dollars giving out a great deal of money to people who will work for the overthrow of their government. Now, we've seen that in the Ukraine. We've seen it in Venezuela. We've seen it in Cuba and throughout the Americas, and it still goes on. We have a great lesson to learn, and that is that we are not going to run this planet. We have 4% of the world's people in the United States. 96% of the people don't live here. They have some other ideas. Many of them believe in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which says that everyone has a right to an education. Everyone has a right to health care, and that torture is absolutely and forever forbidden. Well, our prisons, many of them are just plain torture. Solitary confinement is torture. We have to stop the triumphalism of saying we're number one and start to deal with reality. Our denial is so great in the United States that we had a professor write recently on how war is very good for the economy and very good for our people. And when you get to the level that someone in academia can write a pro-war editorial on how good it is for the society, then you know we're in big trouble. In a humane society, that kind of article would be seen as a joke. I think that John Stewart would like it, or Stephen Colbert, or one of those. But it's not a joke. It's being written about as if the perpetual war system is a good system and very healthy for the economy. Well, that's absolutely untrue.
Brace, I wanted to touch on two things that you said, and then I want to give you my take on why I think all this, you know, the mentality of people in war. But first, let me talk about, you talked about homeless people. There's so many veterans that risked their lives and gave everything they had in this country that are coming back, and now they're many mentally ill. They can't get the VA to help them the way they should be, and they're homeless. A lot of homeless veterans, and I live in Los Angeles, which is the homeless capital of the United States. Then the other thing you talked about was health care. I want to say this, that we should have free health care. We should have free education. There's so many distraught things in this country because of greedy people that just all they think about is money. And let me say this, that in Canada, there's a lot much freer socialized medicine. In Europe, many places in Europe, including France, where it's big time, where everyone has access to health care. And Cuba, we know about that too. Now let's change the subject to what I think, and I want your comments on this, Blaise, as we wind the show down. War is ugly, and the military and the police, their whole way they're brought in, they're trained to be violent, to hurt, to kill first and ask questions later, and they're just so macho, so tough, and so crazy. Not just the United States, but around the world, and we're one of the leaders in this, the mentality of the war machine and the way they get these young people to think this way, and then they come back all messed up mentally. I want your take on this mentality of military and police people.
One of the great graduates and officers of the military who went to West Point, Paul Chappelle, has been writing about this. He basically said war drives us crazy. He says it drives us crazy. And he's served in Iraq, and he's the one who identified this absolutely infantile article by Stanford professor Ian Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S. It was titled, "In the Long Run, Wars Make Us Safer and Richer." And so as a veteran who had suffered a great deal, as an officer, a West Point graduate, he attacks that thought. And, of course, we see the results of war. Our veterans who are ignored, our veterans on the street throughout Los Angeles and our other cities, our veterans who are being ignored, who are being told they don't have post-traumatic stress when they do have post-traumatic stress because the government doesn't want to help them. we have trashed our veterans after every war, and that includes the Revolutionary War when the troops came to Washington and said, where is the farms you promised us? They weren't there. And so the veterans of the Revolution had a revolution, Shays' Rebellion, saying, look, you're lying to us. And that's what we've done to our veterans after each war, except perhaps the Second World War, when we had a functional veterans program that gave them education and health care. But that stopped, because since World War II ended, things have become worse. Here is the former Attorney General of the United States, Ramsey Clark, making this statement. The greatest crime since World War II has been U.S. foreign policy, period. And that's true. We just did nothing but war since the end of World War II, with Korea and Vietnam and all of Latin America and the Middle East, and new wars coming up. We'd like to have a war with China now. Why not have a war somewhere else? And that we're killing people in Yemen, and we're out of control. And this deals with the thinking that war is good for business, and so are war crimes. If we believe that, then we have lost it completely. Multi-billion dollars to weapons producers. We destroyed Iraq and destroyed Afghanistan, and here we are acting in denial as though we have accomplished. We even have our former president. I mean, let's get it together. Here's Jimmy Carter. Direct quote, America is the number one warmonger, unquote. President Jimmy Carter, probably the greatest living president since the president who went back into Congress to fight slavery after he was in. Now, who are we talking about there? I'll give you his name the moment I think of it.
Lincoln or before Lincoln?
No, it wasn't. It'll come to me. But this is Jimmy Carter. And this is why our current president won't talk to him. Jimmy said the other day, Jimmy was asked, did Obama ever talk to you? He said no. And that is so foolish for a current president not to talk to a former president who's had quite a bit of experience. And Jimmy has just come out again with another book. All of his books have been very worthwhile reading because they deal with the questions that the media likes to ignore, apparently, because it's not talking about them. So this is the situation we're in, brother.
Yeah, I want to wind down the show now. If you could please, I want your final thoughts, and I'll give my final thoughts on what we talked about first. But first, give us your contact information, and then I'm going to say something, and you finish up on your end. Go ahead.
Our web is officeoftheamericas.org, and our email is OOA@IAsInIsland, GAS, C as in cat, .org. OOA@IGC.org. And we have the highest level of hope. We agree with Antonio Gramsci, who lived during the days of Italian fascism, as a great scholar. And he said, you know, I have a pessimism of the intellect because of what is going on. However, I have an extreme optimism of the will, because we're going to work for change as long as we're alive. No cynicism, no saying it can't be done, no saying it's impossible. Get up and do something, as Archbishop Romero said. Everyone can do something. Well, do it. Work for peace.
Okay, let me give my final comment, and you can give yours. I'll just take a minute or two, and you do the same, please. About what you, all these things that you said, we talked about medications. We mentioned the VA and how the veterans are coming back. They're being fed enormous amounts of medications, and they're causing side effects. They're causing death. and many, many we didn't talk about, but we, next time we do a show, maybe we'll talk about the suicide rate among veterans. And then also, I want to mention that we talked about war since over the last few hundred years or so, but let's go further back. The time, way back to the Stone Age, people were violent, and animals, it's a crazy world we live in. Go back to 1400 years ago, the Aztecs and the Mayans, there was war back then. The cultures were ripped apart and taken apart, and their history books were ruined. This is happening time after time. And then when the Native Americans here in this country greeted the Europeans in the 1492 and the Columbus and before Columbus and after Columbus, and how they were just ripped apart because of their gold and their minerals and their silver, and how they took their women and raped them and just torture, ugliness. It's been a terrible, terrible thing. And I'm with you 100% on all the things you're saying, but war has been going on constantly. Your final thoughts, and we'll wrap it up.
Yes, so it would be romantic to say that indigenous people never had wars. Some of the romantics say that. It's not true. I mean, war has been with us, together with so-called civilization. And the point is, we have been able to stop various evils in the world, and we simply have to do that now as well. The time has come. We are in greater danger of a nuclear war than ever before. We have never been in such danger of a nuclear war. And we have to understand that and deal with it. These are Holocaust ovens that can burn to death hundreds of millions of people. And they're on high alert in our country, in Russia, and throughout the world. And that's why these demonstrations, we just had a big demonstration at the Livermore Labs in California, 44 people arrested opposing the use of nuclear weapons. We have to continue the work in the streets. We have to continue the work in the courts. And we have to bring our war criminals, our presidents and former presidents and secretaries of state and advisor, they have to be brought to justice. They can't be allowed to go back to the farm and live a quiet life babbling about nothing as they do. They have to be brought before a court, or we're just going to have this repetition of constant war crimes committed by our own people. We didn't allow that to happen with the German war criminals. We need the Nuremberg principles to say you cannot get away with it. You cannot get away with mass murder and torture, and we're bringing you before the law, and we don't care what your title was.
Wow, that's great. Blake, you've been great, and I'm going to continue in a few weeks talking again about World Beyond Wars. What a great group you're part of and I'm part of. Thank you so much for being on this show. You're great, and your information is just superb.
Thanks very much, Bobby. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Bye. That's really great. So much. This man is packed with information about the history of wars and what's been going on. It's been incredible. I believe we have our next speaker on, so let me just go say a few things, and then we'll get our next segment on. We're going to continue to talk about activism, what people can do, and some of the things that are going on around the world, the positive things of how we're young people, how social media and how groups and people are doing things to turn their countries around. And that's going on around the world as we speak. So I'm really happy about that. So Brandon Christie will be on in a few minutes. Let me just say that next week on this show, we're going to have some more talk about healthy aging, possibly the environment. If we can get Marianne Williamson, she's running for U.S. Congress. We'll get her on next week, if not the week after. On the 17th, we're going to talk about cell phone radiation. We've got some new scientific information that's out of this world that's really going to put the country on its ears. We have more big-name people that have been dying of brain cancer and other things because of putting the cell phone next to their ears and other parts of their body. Not good at all. So we'll talk about healthy aging in the next few weeks. Remember, you can hear all of our past shows on the archives. And also, this number I'm going to give you now at the end of the show, tell your friends if they want to hear this show on their cell phone to call area 712-432-7231. At the end of the show, I'm going to give my number out so you can reach me. But let's get to our next guest. His name is Brandon Christie. He is one of the global leaders and speakers, coordinators of Zeitgeist, the Zeitgeist movement. Welcome to the show, Brandon. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Bobby?
I'm always doing great. Doing this show is just great. As you know, you've been on a couple times, and I can't thank you enough because you are, to me, you are a really example of relatively young. I know you're not 20, but you're not 50 either. You're a person that's really doing your job in activism. You want to, so many information that you have about being an activist and what's going on around the world. So let's continue with that. The first thing I'd like to ask you about is, you and I talked earlier about activism and how people can become activists. But first, I want to get your comments on Blaise Montaigne, some of the things he said, and your thoughts on that.
It's great listening to that conversation. Thanks again for having me on. Again, my name is Brandon Christie. I'm with the Zeitgeist Movement. We're a global sustainability group trying to get the world to recognize the structural flaws within the current economic global system and show what's possible for the future if we were to work together and apply solutions collectively for the betterment of all people. Lots of angles could be explored, which we can, you know, explore later. But as far as the conversation that was just had, so many different things could be said on war, you know, from... Well, I'll just say this. As far as war, it's always been with us. And I know you guys were talking about indigenous cultures and how it was, you know, prevalent back then. That it's kind of a myth that cultures were, you know, in balance with nature and that everyone was just, you know, on the peace pipes and they were playing music and that's just all it was. No, they were definitely at war and there was definitely something to do with. It had a lot to do, actually, with the agricultural revolution, where when peoples developed certain technologies, when peoples learned certain things about the natural world, when they figured out the rotation of the sun and how, or the rotation of the planet around the sun, rather, and how to grow crops and how to amass resources, how to control the natural world on a new level, this is where we got certain communities stockpiling resources and stockpiling you know, goods, and this is where stratification came from, this is where classes came from, it really came from this revolution, this agricultural revolution to control nature in a new way, to harness nature in a new way. This is where inequality started to come from, protectionism, you know, tribal protectionism. This is where war really stemmed from, and from that we got things like the state and the armed forces, and it really evolved out of these earlier periods of stockpiling certain goods, and with, you know, to a large degree also that the inherent imbalance with nature still, we weren't in total control, but there was this assumed imbalance with nature, so people had to assume that they had to kind of fight and trade and protect against each other, and there was, that's kind of where it stemmed from. And also, on the issue of war, again, so much could be said about it. The biggest killer of people on this planet, I would say, yes, to a large degree, is war, but class warfare, there's many different warfares going on at the same time here. Yes, there's, you know, nations and, you know, different parts throughout the world competing and fighting to expand their power influence over each other and to protect themselves too, you know, to protect or to expand. I see those as the kind of two different arenas that a nation will do to protect itself or to expand its power and influence. There's also the class warfare, inequality, and people fighting every day through an underlying value structure and an underlying logic that's inherent to our economic system that's assumed as normal. It's just how it plays out, you know, is the degree to which it plays out is the issue. Obviously, we see war and the atrocities, but it plays out on a micro level every day of our lives through competing in businesses and people, you know, even competing for a parking space, or it's just demanded. It's demanded from people to do this. So class warfare and structural classism, the sickness and death that comes from feeling like you are a lower class or you're in poverty, to feeling like that you deserve less, the sickness and the psychological violence that comes from feeling that way, or and also the absolute violence that comes from not having enough, not having your needs met, is the greatest purveyor of violence, is the greatest is the biggest reason why people are dying across this planet. It has less to do with guns and bombs. It has more to do with an economic structure that reinforces a classism throughout the entire world. So I'll stop there. I guess you can go more into it. Just people impose certain morals upon the system, impose certain beliefs and democracy and certain values, but the system cannot facilitate it. Cannot facilitate these certain things because it's built around, again, this age-old assumption of imbalance with nature and hence conflict with each other to harness it.
All right, very good, very good. Okay, we're going to hit on social media. We're going to hit on viral activism. Those are actually hand in hand, and then we're going to talk about what people can do to be an activist. And if we have time, we'll go on beyond that. But let's move on quickly. Social media, let me get my take first. I saw that Howard Dean, when he ran for 14 years ago, something like that, and what he got his staff, he got young people to get on social media, internet, and to spread the word and get the word out there everywhere in this country to join his group called MoveOn.org. Of course. Now, meanwhile, a community activist, Barack Obama, saw that. And a lot of social media work was getting out there and getting big and moving and making things happen. So when Obama ran for president, he had a lot of staff of social media people that really got the word out on his election, and that's one of the reasons he won. Then let's go to the Middle East crisis 3 years ago or so. The Arab Spring, they call it. There was a lot of dictators. There was a lot of Egypt, Syria, many countries in the Middle East were going through hell, going through war, knocking out dictators and changing the face of those countries. It was violent wars, a lot of deaths. It was ugly. But all in all that, there was a lot of young people on the internet, social media, exchanging information, planning, organizing. It got so good that some of the countries over there stopped all cell phone usage. They had their ways of stopping it, and this was terrible. So let's come to your point now. Let's get to how you think social media, tell us about it and why it's good and how people are using it and what we can do in the future with social media and viral activism.
Well, sure. I run a movement page on Facebook, and I run a website, so I know a lot about publishing, and the importance of publishing stuff on the web, keeping things up to date is really important. Consistency, really important. Weekly things for people to, if anyone out there is involved in a group, or if you're a coordinator for some group, I can't emphasize the importance of consistent meetings taking place in someone's house or a cafe, or some type of an event space, whatever you can do at a park to meet and to begin to, because when you meet, you're able to share ideas. I know we're getting off of social or, the social media thing, but social media is where it starts. Social media is the original place for things to be published so that you can meet physically and carry out physical actions, because we can't just, be on the internet. We have to take it outside, we have to spread awareness in a very direct way to the community. But as far as, things on the web, again, consistency, keeping things up to date, and it's all about the creative outflow. And what I mean by that is just putting out something, whatever you can do to make some kind of video of you talking. It's pretty easy these days to make just a simple video. You can use your basic web or your basic computer program to make a simple video of what you advocate, why you advocate, and just get it online. Just get the outflow out there. Flood the internet with activism, internet activism. And also, social media is a great way to stay connected, network. Not a hierarchy here, but a network of communities, of activist communities that can begin to share common goals and share that common interest and, work together to, in these unified activism days that we're seeing more and more, Well, we just had the May 1st, the May Day, they call it. There's different ways people describe the day, but it's a general day for activists to get out there in the community and to show that they want a better world. You know, let's create a better world. That's what people are wanting these days. People do want that. People are not asleep as much as people like to think that. People are awake. People are feeling the health effects. They're feeling, they're seeing the destruction. They're seeing how nothing is changing over the decades, and people have to begin to take the world into their own hands and be self-directed, not wait for any leaders to guide the way or to show them. People have to be self-directed, and I think people are realizing that and are beginning to come together as a whole and just doing whatever they can do, wherever their interests and strengths lie. So social media, yes, networks, it's all about the networks, and this is how nature works, too. Nature is one big network community that is symbiotic and shares throughout its network to create a holistic or a larger impact. It's all about the larger impact.
Right, very good. Wow. Okay, activists, everyone out there that's listening to the show, and people going to college, people that work, just regular everyday people, there is something you can do, my friends. Yes, we can all do something to make this a better world. Not just because that's the name of my show, but that's just in general. We need to make change. We need to, this country, United States of America, and by the way, this is Progressive Radio Network, is an international show, so for those that are in other parts of the world, you have to understand that a lot of things that are happening with war do begin in the United States, but now they're all over the place. But as an activist, I was an activist. I was in the mid-70s when the Vietnam War was coming down, actually earlier than that, mid-70s, we were all in college and high school, and the high schools in L.A. had walkouts twice. And in the last one, after that, we became real big-time activists, and I started a group called the Chicano Moratorium. It was very well known, and I also started a national campaign to stop and resist the draft, because the young people were going into the war. And we were successful, so successful that constantly Nixon had two people following me every day, one or two undercovers. And not only that, but when he did his memoirs, he listed my group as one of the two reasons he stopped the Vietnam War. He gave us some credit, I guess, because we were a very diverse group. But that time, colleges were really, as you know, in the age of Aquarius and the hippie movement and all that stuff, not that I'm a hippie or a flower child, but I was an activist, and a lot of us were against the war, a lot of students, and some worked harder than others. But now I want you, Brandon, if you could tell us your thoughts on how people today can turn around and be an activist for whatever cause they have. And to me, I work with Gary Noe and the Progressive Radio Network station, and we're against the pharmaceutical industry. We're against the war machine. We're against the medical industry. We're against college tuition fees that are gone off the roof. And we're also for free health care, free everything, free education. So there's so many movements. But I think everyone should take the thing they like, their own movement, and jump into it. How can they do this? And give us some tips on how to be an activist. We got about three minutes on this issue, please.
Well, sure. Just to tie in from what you just said about health and education and resource equality, these are human rights issues. And today, and I'm going to feed into what people can do here, but just real quick, today we do have solutions. We have all the solutions and the technology and the answers and the awareness of the planet. We have the awareness of each other, of what supports a healthy human being, and we see what certain structural issues within the system, what it creates. We know how to create that better world. Why don't we do it? Because we're not working together as a planet. And all these issues, that's why it's become a human rights issue, all of these issues. When taken together, it's a civil rights issue, and that's really what the Zeitgeist movement and many movements, I think, in the context here, what they are. It's a civil rights issue here. We're not talking about everyone being the same. We're talking about resource equality, and that is a different issue. But these things, again, are economically reinforced, so we have to look at the economic system itself. And today, that's what's so different about activism today. It's an activism today has very much changed to look at the system as a whole. People are more and more looking at the structural flaws. They're looking at our methods of economy, how we're going about basically meeting the needs of the human population. And we're seeing that it's extremely out of date, going back to, again, the agricultural revolution, earlier periods where conflict and imbalance was assumed. And when our, you know, the forefathers of the country set up this certain system of exchange, I don't think they fathomed that it would play out this way. I think they would be horrified if they saw how it had played out today. I think it was good at the time that it came about, and that it was maybe, you know, good in its initiation. But I think they would truly be horrified if they saw what it's doing to people and what it's doing to the planet, making it uninhabitable for the future. But what can people do right now? Again, activism is different now. It's about looking at the whole of things, holistic view, rather than just the parts of things, rather than the mechanistic view, which looks at just the parts of the system. We got to look at the whole entire system. So just get involved. Get involved any way you can. We still need the groups, you know, saving the whales. We still need the groups protesting at certain functions and buildings and certain areas to stop the bleeding, as it were. Because the planet and our system very much is, you know, bleeding to death here. We do need those band-aids, the short-term effects, but we need the long-term too. We need to look at the long-term, again, the whole system. But just get involved any way you can. Do something. I know we all work jobs. I know we're all busy, but this is very much an issue of sacrifice. You know, I don't think any of us, of course, we enjoy our work as activists. It's meaningful, but there is a certain level of sacrifice. You're sacrificing time away from your families, your friends, your comforts, living a good, interesting, fun life. We're taking away that time and directing it towards coordinating activism, coordinated efforts, education. And this is it's important. If anyone cares about the future of this planet and about society, I can't think of anything more meaningful than to contribute to that. And I think at the end of someone's life, if they do that, just may be able to die a happy human being. And I think that's what it's all about, contributing and having it being meaningful in your life. And finding that meaning, you have to be extremely creative in how you motivate yourself and find that meaning. Otherwise, it may fade, and one may lose interest. But I don't experience that, but I can definitely relate to it. So you got to be really creative in how you motivate yourself. So get involved any way you can. Do something. And lastly, I'll just finish off here. It's all about advocating the larger evolution, the larger evolution playing out. Advocating the largest relevant set of solutions at any given time, which is the application of science and technology to move us into a new paradigm of sustainability, sharing resources, health, well-being, and exploring space. It's all about awareness. You know, there's nothing more important than awareness and education.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Give us quickly your contact information. Our time is running out.
Sure. Thanks again for having me, Bobby. My name is Brandon Christie, and I'll just give our main website. From there, you can find your local chapter or whatever you need. It's www.thezeitgeistmovement.com. Zeitgeist is spelled Z-E-I-T-G-E-I-S-T. And look us up. We're all about the awareness, because at the end of the day, it's all about what you're aware of within the current system and what is possible for the future.
Great. Beautiful. All right. Thank you so much, Brandon, and we'll have you on again.
Thanks, Bobby. Talk to you again.
All right. Great show today. All right, let's talk about next week. And the 17th is actually 2 weeks from today. We're going to talk about cell phone radiation with some new scientific information from a pure activist that's really on the issue with some stuff that many of us haven't heard, and also how many important people as well as regular people are not only dying but going through serious, serious medical conditions from putting the phone next to your ear, putting it in different parts of your body. You do not have a phone. It, believe it or not, breast cancer is being hit with people that have phones near that, right in the front of their face. Not good. Not good at all. We're going to talk about that on the 17th. Next week on the 10th, Marianne Williamson will be on, hopefully. If she's not on, we'll try to get a tape of her. And whenever not, if not, we're going to get into healthy aging and other issues. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We can be reached on the archives. A phone number you can call in order to hear the show is area 712-432-7231. Here's my number if you have any questions, 323-770-1925. I want to thank the engineer, Martin. I want to thank New York producer, Jason, our L.A. producer, Jimmy D., and the guy who's been doing a lot of work, Stuart Hassel, our associate producer. I want to thank our speakers today, Blaise and Brandon. That's Blaise Bontaine and Brandon Christie. I want to thank you, the listeners. Now if we can get a little time for our song. This song tells how we feel. It's the theme of our song, and it fits right in how we are the world, and we want to, let's create a better world. Thank you all. See you next week.
When the world must come together as one, there are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can't go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change. We all are part of God's great big family. And the truth, you know, love is all we need.